The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tonight on The Readout.
And just minutes ago, standing beside Speaker Johnson, Donald Trump just said the collection of state bans is, quote, working the way it is supposed to.
Vice President Kamala Harris, just a short time ago in Arizona, delivering a scathing rebuke to those who are taking away reproductive rights in that state and across the country. Also tonight, Trump rarely steps foot into church, and yet he's increasingly stoking Christian nationalist sentiment, which was once at the fringes of politics and has now almost totally consumed the Republican Party. Plus, two election deniers get together in Florida to talk about, air quotes, election integrity, as Speaker MAGA Mike Johnson clings to Donald Trump in hopes of saving his stumbly, bumbly, unproductive, and all-around disastrous speakership. But we begin tonight with small but important signs of hope for our 248-year-old democracy. Yes, it remains under severe threat from Donald Trump and his Christian Nationalist Party. Just not for the reasons that he's telling you. What is set to begin in a Manhattan courtroom Monday morning is not an attack on democracy, as Trump is leading his cult members to believe. It's actually a sign of its health and evidence that it can still function the way it was intended to. To help explain, I want to take a brief trip to Italy and introduce you to Silvio Berlusconi, the country's longest-serving prime minister and a former media baron. He was caught in an endless string of investigations during his time in politics and was ultimately indicted for embezzlement, tax fraud, bribery, abuse of office, and underage prostitution. While Berlusconi was able to get out of just about all of the charges against him, he did ultimately face accountability and was convicted. 81 years ago, Italy was run by fascists. Today, it is a functioning democracy. And Berlusconi's conviction is evidence of that. In fact, we've seen plenty of democracies prosecute former heads of state, including France's Nicolas Sarkozy for charges including corruption and illegal campaign financing, South Korea's Park Geun-hye for bribery and coercion, and South Africa's Jacob Zuma for contempt of court tied to a corruption inquiry. Just last month, Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro was indicted for allegedly falsifying data related to COVID vaccinations while he was president. And of course, when it comes to current indictments, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu remains under a criminal indictment for corruption, even as he currently leads the country and Israel's harrowing war in Gaza. Some might say he's keeping that disastrous war going to push back the start of his trial even. But this is a thing that happens in democracies. If a head of state is found to have committed a crime, they're prosecuted, just like any other citizen. Because in a democracy, there are no kings, no dictators, no one is above the law. The principle of equal justice under the law, which is engraved on the front of the United States Supreme Court, is no less true here in this democracy. And on Monday, Donald Trump will see it function firsthand as his hush money election interference trial gets underway. Now, ironically, it's in the same courtroom where the Central Park Five were prosecuted as teenagers for a sexual crime they actually didn't commit. A group who were exonerated after Trump, who was recently found civilly liable for sexual abuse, called for their executions. Irony has a strong sense of humor. And in the last few hours, Judge Juan Marchand shot down one of Trump's last remaining motions to try to delay this trial. Trump's claim of pretrial publicity in which Trump was seeking an indefinite adjournment. In his order, Marchand points to Trump's own public statements for much of the publicity that is out there, writing, the situation defendant finds himself in now is not new to him, and at least in part of his own doing. The judge also agreed that the solution would come next week by conducting a thorough, thoughtful, and effective voir dire during jury selection. And yes, that case that starts on Monday is historic, the first criminal trial of a former president. But what Trump wants you to believe is that somehow that threatens democracy. It doesn't. What does threaten it is his effort to stoke the flames of chaos. One of his campaign fundraising emails this morning refers to the start of the trial on Monday and declares 72 hours until all hell breaks loose. Now, you'll recall that the last time someone in Trump's inner circle said all hell would break loose, it was Steve Bannon on his podcast the day before the January 6th insurrection. Still in the courtroom, unlike on Capitol Hill back in 2021, all hell will not break loose. In fact, it will run just like any other criminal trial. Trump will be required to sit in the courtroom every single day while his lawyers conduct the trial. He'll be expected to behave himself, and he will be presented with a presumption of innocence before the jury. A jury, by the way, that will likely hear directly from Trump.
Testify your trial in New York.
Yeah, I would testify, absolutely. It's a scam. It's a scam. That's not a trial. That's not a trial. That's a scam.
And look, if the prosecutors can't prove that you did it, Donald, you'll get off. You'll walk scot-free. See? Democracy. Now, outside the courtroom, all bets are off. The Secret Service and the New York Police Department are already making special security arrangements in preparation for whatever happens and whoever decides to show up. The wild card, of course, is the defendant. Trump will surely not shy away from cameras outside the courtroom, where he can continue his attacks on the judge, the prosecutors, the witnesses, maybe even the jury. But inside that courtroom, democracy will prevail. Joining me now is Katie Fang, MSNBC legal contributor and host of The Katie Fang Show on MSNBC. Glenn Kirshner, former federal prosecutor and MSNBC legal analyst. And Bobby Ghosh, senior editor at Bloomberg. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to just go right down the line and start with you, Katie. Because the thing is that Monday, as madcap as I'm expecting it to be, and I'm assuming you will, and Glenn will be hostages inside of one NBC news bureau or another, you're not going to be able to leave all day because you're going to be covering it all day. But that might actually be the most normal thing that we've seen relating to Trump really since 2016, him going into a courtroom and being not arraigned, but him facing jury selection like any other citizen. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think that's important, Joy, to point out, because if you look at the style of the case, and the style is the name, it's the people of New York, right? Versus Donald J. Trump. He doesn't get the benefit of President Trump. As we know, annoyingly, his lawyers consistently refer to him as President Trump in legal filings and when they speak about him in court. But it is the humbling moment when he has to sit at counsel's table, not by choice, but by law and required procedure, when he is referred to as criminal defendant Donald Trump, that the playing field is truly leveled. And that is when accountability comes a knocking and hard. Because the voir dire process, the jury selection process, all the way to the verdict being rendered against him is something that affects thousands of Americans on a daily basis. And so regardless of how much he wants to have all hell break loose outside, there will be a silence that will be happening in that courtroom. Because Donald Trump will not be in the driver's seat. Judge Juan Merchan will be controlling his courtroom as he does. And Donald Trump will not have any free rein to act out when he's in court. And he will have to, again, sit humbly and quietly while the judicial system does its work.
Yeah, something he's not used to doing. And Glenn, I mean, we've just been covering, obviously, the death of O.J. Simpson. You know, that was sort of a monumental trial of the century in the 21st century. What do you think that we in the media should have learned from that spectacle that I remember? I was telling Chris Hayes the other day, I was 25 years old on maternity leave. So I watched the trial like I felt like I was the 13th member of the jury. But what do you think that we in the media should learn from that coverage of spectacle? Because the way in which Trump is not like every other American is the same way OJ was not like every other American. He's a celebrity. And on top of that, he's a former president. What should we learn as what should we think about as we're watching that spectacle?
You know, I think we should focus on the fact that the rule of law matters. The rule of law is one of the things that makes this country great, that makes us a civilized people. And I firmly believe we're in a really important moment because our nation will be stronger for a former president of the United States who committed all kinds of crimes. He's indicted 88 times over. The evidence, in my assessment, even that's just been publicly reported, is overwhelming. And our nation will be stronger once our lived experience is that even a former president of the United States can be put through a fair judicial process, and a jury of his peers, a jury of ordinary citizens, will be in a position to decide whether the admissible evidence proves his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. I believe he'll be held accountable. I believe he'll be convicted. But one way or another, our nation will come out the other side of this so much stronger for just having gone through the exercise of putting a criminal former president on trial.
Yeah. And, you know, Bobby, I wanted to bring you in. I know you've written a lot about this because I think it is a normalizing thing. I think Americans sometimes want exceptionalism so badly that they forget we're part of the world, you know. And I thought of Berlusconi because, you know, Rula Jabril, who you and I both know very well, who's a great journalist and who's done a lot of, a lot of her journalism in Italy. You know, she's the one who first told me, you know, Trump is America's Berlusconi, very similar sort of larger than life media kind of character. And his that was a humbling moment for one of the most powerful men ever in Italy's history. What does it say to you, just as someone who's covered the international sort of media world and international politics, that Donald Trump is going to meet the same kind of system of justice that he had to?
Well, it would be a terrific advertisement for American democracy when you put the former president on trial. We're talking about how it will be perceived in this country, how New Yorkers will see it, how his supporters will see it. But I'm thinking of how the world will see it. And the world will see American democracy, which we like to preach to the rest of the world. The world will see American democracy, the American justice system in action. And I think the world will welcome that. You talk of Berlusconi, Jacques Chirac of France was convicted. Three presidents in a row in Brazil. Three presidents in South Korea. Mm-hmm. These are not sort of, to use a slightly unpopular phrase, these are not banana republics. These are thriving democracies. And it's a good thing for a democracy to show everybody within the country, and because we are United States, to show the wider world that in a democracy, the systems of justice work independently from the political process. It does not matter how popular. Never mind that he was a former president. It does not matter how popular a person is, how famous he is, that he has to go through the same system of accountability and justice as you or me. That's very, very important. That's a fantastic, as I said at the top, fantastic advertisement for American democracy to the world.
Yeah, and we need it because January 6th was like the opposite. And I mean, Katie, I mean, the thing is, you know, there are some ways in which the advertisement is a little bit less powerful, because in a lot of those cases, whether it is in South Korea or whether it was in France or in Italy, I do believe in all of those cases, having been convicted, it made them ineligible either permanently or in the case of Italy for, I think, 18 years for running for office again. In the United States, the thing, and a lot of people ask me this all the time and really need it reclarified over and over again, the thing unique about our system is that Donald Trump, even if he then becomes a felon, a whole felon, as a result of a conviction, which Glenn has predicted will happen, he can still run. He can still be president. He could still actually get convicted in one of these later trials. Let's say one of them miraculously happens before the election and still be inaugurated, even if he's on his way to actual prison.
Yeah, and that is the reason why, to Bobby's point and Glenn's point and your point, the reason why justice is so important is the judicial system has two components, as we know. One of it is to basically be punitive. There's the punishment part of it. It's the jail, the prison, the part where you've broken the laws, you've broken the social contract that exists amongst all of us, and for that, you must be punished. But the other component of the judicial system, Joy, is the deterrent factor, right? So the idea of taking somebody like Donald Trump, and as Bobby said, regardless of whether he was the former president of the United States, his popularity being what it is, no matter how ill-founded it is, Joy. But his popularity being one thing, if you have the deterrent component of this, it is to serve to not only stop him from committing crimes again, being Donald Trump, but for people that are like him, people like Donald Trump that are cut from his cloth, preventing them from doing the same thing. It's this idea, if you get punished enough, you deter others from doing the same criminal conduct. And so I believe that even if he's eligible as a convicted felon, I don't know how you're doing this from prison, yeah. Joy. We all know that the levers of justice and the levers of our government are not going to function with a president in prison. And I don't care how crazy our country seems to have become, I don't think we've crossed or jumped that shark enough to be at that point.
Yeah, and Bobby, I mean, your name was called. I'm going to go back to you for a moment because, I mean, look, the difference also is, too, is Donald Trump is really pushing the limits of the gag order, of how much he can say about the prosecutors, and also of threatening violence. You know, Berlusconi, these other, you say what you want about them, they weren't threatening to burn the country to the ground. Bolsonaro, maybe, when he was in Miami, I don't know what he was threatening when he was hanging out with Trump. But the idea that Trump is also the most dangerous of the people that I mentioned at the top is something, it's exceptionalism in a bad way for us.
Yes, it is. And it has an impact on around the world. Berlusconi, when he went to prison, it didn't really matter to folks in China. It didn't matter to anybody in Brazil or in South Africa or anywhere else in the world outside of a very small circle within Italy. Donald Trump, because he's the former president of the United States, this has international ramifications. You know, the current president of Brazil, Lula, was in prison. I mean, he served a term in prison. That didn't stop him from then coming out of prison and then running for president and winning the election. That does happen in a few other countries. I am a little skeptical, if I may say, about the deterrent effect, because we've seen, again, to use a Brazilian example, if three consecutive presidents were convicted for corruption, that tells you that it doesn't really work as a deterrent. But yeah. You know what? That's not what will be in the mind of the judge who'll be presiding over the court. The judges will judge Trump in the specifics of this case.
Right.
And that's how it should be. Let the politicians think about the deterrent effect. Let you and I talk about the deterrent effect, but that's not what the judge's job is. The judge will do their job, and that's something that's the signal that the rest of the world has to see out of the United States.
Amen.
The justice system. It's what?
Yeah, Hitler went to jail, too. Just throwing that in there. Glenn Kirsch, I'm going to give you the last word on this. Came out and ran and became chancellor of Germany. So then how do you expect the prosecutor to handle this case? It's his biggest case, Alvin Bragg. He's in the central spotlight here. What do you expect him to do? How do you expect him to conduct it?
Oh, I expect we're going to see a very professional, very compelling presentation of the government's case in chief, the evidence that the prosecution will introduce to try to prove the charges. I wish there were cameras in the courtroom because
Same.
We
yeah.
could sure benefit from seeing it ourselves. But what Donald Trump, I don't think will ever understand or appreciate is he has been trying this case in the court of public opinion, where there are no rules of evidence, there are no rules of procedure, there are no rules of law, and the Constitution doesn't apply. Once this moves into a court of law proper, he won't be able to say and do the things that he has been saying and doing to tear down our institutions of government day in and day out. And once the rules of law and procedure and evidence apply, I believe that he is going to go down in flames because the evidence against him is powerful. It's corroborated. There is an audio recording of him involving himself in the corrupt scheme
yeah.
to make these hush money payments and cover them up. So I think the prosecution is up to the task of presenting the evidence professionally and in a compelling way.
And we are all going to be watching. It is going to be historic, and it probably is going to indeed be wild, to quote Donald Trump. Katie Fang, Glenn Kirshner, Bobby Ghosh, thank you all very much. What an excellent panel. Up next on The Readout, America's Collision Course, how the rise of Christian nationalism and the possible reelection of its self-anointed savior threatens our democracy. The Readout continues after this.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
3 days before the start of his criminal trial, which is centered around allegedly paying hush money to a porn star to try to cover up their affair to hold on to evangelical voters in 2016 in the wake of the Access Hollywood video scandal, Donald Trump posted on his flailing social media site a picture of Jesus standing over him next to an American flag with his hands on Trump's shoulders and the words, "Strengthen him, Lord. Send legions of angels to protect him, Father." It may be shocking, but not necessarily surprising, coming from a man who has spent the better part of the last decade stoking Christian nationalism, assembling what is essentially a religious cult, Jim Jones style, and convincing his evangelical flock that he is under attack, and therefore so is Christianity. It's become a central pillar of his 2024 campaign, from his rallies to his plans for a potential second administration. But the ideals of Christian nationalism did not start with Donald Trump. A new documentary, Bad Faith, investigates how the movement that was once on the fringes of Christian conservative thought hijacked the Republican Party and surged to the forefront of American politics today.
But neither has this movement ever been about shaping people in the way of Jesus. This movement has been about scaring white Christian people into believing that there is an enemy out there that's going to obliterate you. If you believe that, then, you know, you believe that in your home you need to have the biggest, baddest gun possible. And in the White House, you also want the biggest, baddest gun possible. And Donald Trump is that gun.
Joining me now is Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, who you just saw in that clip. He's assistant director at the Yale Center for Public Theology and Public Policy. I feel like I've just seen you, Jonathan, because I just did. I was just at the Yale Center with you 2 days ago. And then we just manifested getting to hang out again together. Talk to me about this documentary. What will it reveal about the origins of Christian nationalism in the U.S.?
Oh, this is a powerful film. I just saw it in D.C. last night at its premiere there. What the film does and does really well is it helps people understand the network behind the movement that really created Donald Trump. I mean, in some ways, Trump is a symptom, mm-hmm. a symptom of something that has been at work for a very long time. And this really matters to me because I was raised in a place, I grew up in a church that was targeted by this network more than 40 years ago. And so the film lays out how a political operative named Paul Weyrich worked with many powerful people and increasingly grew that circle, brought in more money to create a real wraparound culture that has inundated certain parts of this country with a kind of manipulation of their faith. Now, sometimes people see this on TV and look at it and say, how could people be so crazy? But if that's all you hear day after day from the local television, from radio, from, you know, people who come through your churches and folks that you trust, this is a movement that has had a real warping effect. And, you know, it's deeply concerning for our democracy, but I'm a pastor. And as a pastor, it's deeply concerning for the church.
Yeah.
Because in order to gain political power, this movement has tried to pit people against one another.
Yeah.
Go on, finish. I was just going to say quickly, I was talking to Steve Ulacki, who made this film, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's been making films for a long time, but you know, he didn't grow up in this culture, and he was telling me that his big question was, where did this come from? You know, it didn't make any sense to him, and he said the process of making the film and learning this story helped him to see that the distrust of government that's become widespread in parts of the country was carefully cultivated, and it was cultivated by this movement.
Yeah, let me play another clip real quick. Here it is.
I would say they don't have their Jesus. They may have their Trump, but they don't have their Jesus. I'm kind of particular about the Jesus thing. They can't have that brown-skinned Palestinian Jew who said, I come to preach good news to the poor, healing to the brokenhearted, recovery of sight to the blind. They can't have that Jesus because he's already told us what he stands for. And that's what always gets in the way of Christian nationalism. It proves it ain't Christian because the problem is Jesus.
And that, of course, is our friend, the Bishop William Barber. I mean, the thing that is, I think people don't understand, Paul Weyrich, who you mentioned, is the guy who got evangelicals to suddenly care about abortion, because they didn't. You know, when Roe v. Wade originally, when that ruling was made, Christians had no thoughts on it and were mostly pro-choice and didn't care. He's the one who said, no, 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 let's not focus on the thing we really care about, which was we really wanted our white schools that were all white and were segregated. We need to focus on something more palatable. How did people manage to get people to go from the Bible, which is the Jesus who cares about the poor and the sick, to caring about things like abortion and gay people and things like that?
Well, the movement played to fear, but it didn't do it explicitly, because I think the movement realized in the post-civil rights era that it couldn't appeal directly to racism. It had to use religion instead of racism, right? So Weyrich's sort of organizational genius is that he takes the fear and the anger around these Christians who want to hold on to their segregation academies, and he says, no, actually what you're for is you're pro-life and you're pro-family. So you're trying to create educational systems for your kids that are going to instill those values in them. And he begins to manipulate this religious language that people had learned in church and to use it to play to the worst fears in their local culture. I mean, I think that this is always the potential of religion, right? Mm-hmm. I Bishop Barber and I teach people who are going to be ministers in the church, and we teach the history of religion in this country. And this has always been here, right? In public, religion has always been possible as a tool for division and for stirring up division.
Right.
But on the other side, and why it's so powerful, is that it has also been an incredible strength for bringing people together. I mean, it took faith-based movements to bring about abolition, about the labor movement. It was at the heart of the New Deal. It was the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement. And so what we're trying to say, both in this film and in everything we're doing, is that something that powerful can be put to use for good. And that's why we had clergy together just this week in New Haven and made a declaration of clergy who said, we are going to go from this place and preach the real moral issues. We're not going to fall for these divide and conquer issues. We're going to preach the real moral issues and bring people together in the public square.
Real evangelicals evangelize the good news of Jesus, which is good news to the poor, the sick, and the rejected, and the immigrant.
That is the truth.
Jonathan Wilson Hargrove. I know, because I'm a church girl. I'm telling you, church girls will get it together. Thank you, Jonathan Wilson Hargrove. Appreciate you. And the documentary Bad Faith will be streaming online next week. Up next, Vice President Kamala Harris visited the new ground zero for the 2024 election, Arizona, just 3 days after that state's Supreme Court turned back the clock and revived a 160-year-old Civil War era near total ban on abortion. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Because of Donald Trump, more than 20 states in our nation have bans. Now, because of Donald Trump, 1 in 3 women of reproductive age in our country live in a state that has a Trump abortion ban. Just like he did in Arizona, he basically wants to take America back to the 1800s.
That's right.
But we are not going to let that happen. Because here's the deal. This is 2024. not the 1800s, and we're not going back.
That was Vice President Kamala Harris, the highest elected female official in U.S. history, speaking on behalf of millions of Americans who are now the targets of conservative men across the land. Her trip comes just 4 days after the Arizona Supreme Court delivered a potential death sentence to thousands of women in their state when they decided that nearly all abortions will be banned. Joining me now is Molly Jong-Fast, special correspondent for Vanity Fair and MSNBC contributor and comedian, writer, and actor, Jay Jordan. We're going to add MSNBC contributor to you, too, eventually. We're going to make it out. We're going to manifest it. But we're just talking off the break. Let's bring that on camera. This is Kamala Harris at her most powerful and on an issue she truly cares about.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, in that time period in the 1870s, you didn't have women politicians. Because women couldn't vote.
Couldn't vote.
Right. I mean, Lincoln was president when this bill was passed.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important what she's doing is she's out there and she's messaging about it because Republicans are running scared, right? And yesterday we saw Sean Hannity blamed the Democrats for this. When you have Republicans on the floor of the Arizona State House praying together, refusing to repeal this bill because they could. Remember, yeah. A conservative court put this in and a conservative legislature is keeping it in. So this is really Republicans doing. And by the way, I think it's really interesting. On Monday, Trump came out and made this states' rights comment. Mm-hmm. They knew an Arizona decision was coming.
Yes.
They knew it was going to be an 1850s kind of thing, and he still did it. And now he owns states' rights.
Right. I mean, the thing is that they're literally doing all of it at the same time. I mean, in 1864, the reason slavery was primarily illegal was because slaves, when they were raped and gave birth, that's property.
Yes.
And it's a property crime.
Yes.
And white women were essentially owned by their husbands and fathers.
And when you bring up states' rights and when you bring up the 1850s, as a black person from Mississippi, I go, I know what's happening.
Yeah.
I know exactly what's happening. Yeah. They're also Republican men are trying to walk back from this. They're saying, it's not a big deal.
Right.
What's the biggest deal? If you have to buy one bus ticket in your lifetime and go out of state to get an abortion.
Yeah.
I'm from Mississippi. The pink house that started this entire thing,
which is now a furniture store,
a block away from my high school, Mississippi problems become American problems.
Right.
So
right.
This is tied to them. And they can't really win over any moderate women, moderate white women, moderate college-educated white women when they keep doing stuff like this.
Yeah, and let me play the one example of that. This is Carrie Lake, who's trying to be like, I'm here. Now I'm 180 degrees from here. Here she is.
This total ban on abortion that the Arizona Supreme Court just ruled on is out of line with where the people of this state are. The issue is less about banning abortion and more about saving babies.
Obviously, I think Roe v. Wade should be overturned. And I think the Supreme Court, I have a good feeling that they're going to do the right thing this time. And again, I'll echo what Steve just said. We have a great law on the books right now. If that happens, we will be a state where we will not be taking the lives of our unborn anymore.
Do they not know that they're on tape? Do they think the tape don't work?
Listen, T.T. Carey, we have a lot of things to say about you on Black Twitter based on a ton of images we've
seen.
A
whole bunch of things.
But that is such a walk back. She's backpedaling like a cornerback. What is happening?
They know. She knows Arizona's a swingy state, and she's never going to win with that craziness. And remember, in 22, she didn't win, and then she
said, I'm the governor still. I'm still the governor. Oh, win or by one.
And her announcement, sorry, was that she was going to work with Governor Hobbs to come up with something. I was like, you know, you're not anything.
When Carrie Lake says she's pro-choice, that just means she gets to choose what she believes in that week.
Exactly. And the thing is, what they're promising, I mean, what we're now seeing, to go back to, it's literally an 1864 law. And women are creating an underground railroad to get out of red states. Put the map up. They're putting an underground railroad to try to get out of the South. It couldn't be more literal.
You have to take legal action if you are the creator of The Handmaid's Tale, because now they're just stealing your IP.
Yes,
at this point, what are you going to do, Margaret Atwood?
Listen, I don't know. I mean, at least now she's not of childbearing age. I guess she'd be a Martha.
Yes.
Well, listen, I've had three children, but I might be a Martha too, based on the book. And you as well. We're all going to be Marthas. Yes. Molly and Jay and I are staying with us. We're all going to be Marthas in The Handmaid's Tale. Because up next, two election deniers make a truly ludicrous announcement on election integrity.
Yay.
Stay with us.
I'm going to announce to you today, here standing alongside President Trump, that we will do everything within our power to ensure that we do have free and fair elections in this country. If we don't have that in a constitutional republic, we have nothing. It's the basis of who we are as a nation, and we owe that to the American people. And so what we're going to do is introduce legislation to require that every single person who registers to vote in a federal election must prove that they're an American citizen first.
Yep, those prominent election deniers have a plan to further undermine our elections by trying to make voting harder. Now, before I go any further, non-citizens, zoom in on me here, cannot vote in federal elections and have not been able to do so for decades. It's literally illegal, literally. Also, it was Donald Trump who tried to steal the 2020 election with help from Congressman Mike Johnson, who helped recruit 125 House Republicans to sign on to a legal brief that asked the Supreme Court to overturn Biden's wins in four key states. Johnson, using his credentials as a constitutional lawyer, also helped formulate the legal theory to decertify the election on January 6th. So no, maybe don't take their recommendations seriously, you know, unless you have a deal with the RNC to pay for your legal fees. Because that can happen if you're in the family. Back with me, Molly Jongfast and Jay Jordan. You can't vote in American election if you're a non-citizen. The end.
Going to Mar-a-Lago to investigate election integrity, that's like listening to Mo Money, Mo Problems to find out if Diddy did it. What are we doing? I think they have a bias there. You went to Mar-a-Lago to say, we're going to make sure these things are above and beyond legality.
Yeah, right. They're not illegal. They're illegal, so we're going to do a law to make them more illegal.
Yeah, my favorite part of this is, like, did they not know there was this law? I mean, the Republicans are really good. You know, next week they have all these appliance laws,
right? The appliance laws are amazing.
Next week is appliance law in Congress. I mean, Mike Johnson with his one vote majority is so, I mean, if he were not who he is, I would feel bad for him.
Yeah.
But he goes down there. He looks like you could tell this was Trump's idea. You know, it just was so.
Do the thumbs up. Right. They're doing like the Freon in the Fridge Protection Act. I mean, let our gas stove survive. They're literally doing
that. Gas stove.
I think that Mike Johnson and Trump should do what Mike Johnson and his son did and just keep each other accountable on what porn they watch.
Keep it accountable on the porn. Well, that's in the trial next week. We're going to talk about porn next week. And then the lady, I love her, by the way. I think she's amazing. Stormy. Well, let's talk about the Chicken Shack Trump moment. Trump, because you want to appeal to the blacks, you've already done sneakers. Now let's do chicken. Let's play it.
We've also knocked doors for you in the past for your past re-election bid and when you ran the first time.
Yeah. Wow.
I was interning for the GAGOP at that time. Wow. Doing a lot for your tax credit reform bill and everything like that.
Well, took care of those colleges.
Sure did. Much better than Biden did. So I was This is Clark Atlanta. This is Stoneman. This is Morehouse. This is Morris Brown.
Isn't that great?
So I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump. We support you.
We support
you. Okay, 4 p.m. We've been 4 p.m.
Come here. Let me give you a hug.
Bless her Candace Hart. Spelman and Morehouse Democrats put out a statement saying our goal is to simply reiterate our unequivocal beliefs about our beloved HBCUs. We do not support white supremacists. We do not support convicted predators. We do not support voter suppression. We do not support liars. We do not support fascism. Do not speak for us. I'm going to just tell you, as somebody who worked on campaigns, Secret Service has to go through that room. They're not just going to let anyone in there unless they're pre-screened. That lady said she was an intern for the Republican Party of Georgia. She used to work for Candace Owens' little firm, her little thing, Blexit. She's a plant, so we know that. And everyone in that room was pre-screened to be in that room. This was not him walking into a chicken shack and people being like, Trump!
Also, you know he stole a couple of Polynesian sauces before
he
left.
Did.
You know he did.
And doesn't know what to do with them.
And also, I'm surprised he didn't try to go on Sunday because he doesn't know when they're open.
The idea that he's so desperate to show that the blacks love Trump. I had so many people, I don't go on Twitter anymore because it's too Nazi.
What?
But there were people on there trying to get my attention by being like, oh, Joy is going to hate. Joy Reid is going to hate to see Donald Trump hugging a black. Oh my God. She's going to be enraged.
Exactly like that.
You know they were shaking like that when they said it.
It's like fundamentally so upsetting to think that this is, you know, I mean, man says all this racist stuff. He does all this racist stuff. And then he thinks he can go to a restaurant and.
Well, let's be clear. He thinks he can go to a chicken restaurant.
A chicken restaurant.
Fill it with black people and go, see? They love me.
They love me and the
chicken. They love me almost as much as they love this chicken. That's what I wanted to say.
And I will put it on the other side that, you know, even things like, okay, the Biden administration is going to put out their own list of things they have actually done for African Americans, $7 billion, affordable housing. You've got to me, the big thing is the loan forgiveness.
Right.
Yes. That's actually a big deal. $153 billion in student loan forgiveness.
More today.
Right. Trump has tried to be like, the first step back is me. That was literally a black congresswoman who did the first step. He signed it. Like, he's trying to take credit for things, but there is this question.
Well, he freed Lil Wayne. Is that enough? Well, he pardoned Lil Wayne.
And he's very...
And ASAP... Well, ASAP Rocky out of Sweden.
Oh, yeah.
That was hard.
Listen.
That's tough. Sweden can be tough. Sweden's a difficult place to be incarcerated. He got him home. He freed ASAP Rocky. But, I mean, there is that meme that Republicans are so desperate to prove that the blacks love them now. That women love them. That, that everyone loves what they're doing.
Well, I think they should start by probably enacting policies that would actually help black people and women. And hear me out, black women. I don't even know.
And I do think that the Biden campaign is starting to feel a little bit more confident.
Yeah.
Because as Trump becomes more incoherent and as this abortion thing becomes an absolute dumpster fire.
Yeah.
I think that that gives Democrats some more confidence if people turn out.
Well, if you when you hear Trump talk, I mean, he's not a gifted orator. He has never been a gifted orator, but he does seem a little weirder than
cognitive issues.
I mean, he seems tired and he doesn't seem the sort of same. You know, in 2016, he was able to go from place to place to place.
Sure.
He doesn't quite make that kind of movement yet. And he somehow thinks that 3 weeks of a trial is going to really elevate him with swing voters. I just don't see the math.
I mean, not knowing whether Nikki Haley and Nancy Pelosi, which is which.
Yeah. Yes.
Might not mean you're in the strongest country.
Also, we can't even skip over the fact that why is he in Atlanta? Because he's during a criminal case. He's not just hanging out in Atlanta. There's a criminal case.
He went for the chicken.
He didn't go for the chicken.
He went for the chicken. Don't go anywhere because Molly and Jay are staying with us because you guess what we're going to do? We're going to play Who in the Week. Could my pick possibly be basketball legend Dawn Staley? Because she won a lot this week. Well, you have to stay tuned. We made it to the end of another week. Thank you, Jesus. And I mean Jesus, not Trump. Which means it is time to play our very favorite game. Is he not Jesus? Who won the week? Back with me, Molly Jongfast and Jay Jordan. Molly, who won the week?
The vice president. And I have, by the way, I have like felt that she has been underappreciated and taken for granted and treated shabbily, as many black women are. And I've seen her all summer. She was in an all fall and winter. Yeah. She was at HBCU. She was touring. She was, you know, zipping around the country. Yeah. And this week I felt like people finally got it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's her season.
Yeah. And you're hearing the crowds responding. The speech she gave in Arizona today was really excellent. And she was really clear. Mm-hmm. And she made the case for why women don't want to go back, you know, two centuries.
This is why she was important to have on the ticket. Jay, who won the week?
Who won the week? Women's college basketball won the week. I'm talking about the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Come on.
I'm talking about Caitlin Clark.
Yes.
And also I have to add that another very strong woman won the week, the moon. The moon is
a
woman.
Moon.
The moon is a woman and the sun is a man. And she said, get out of here. At least for 4 minutes. Also, I want to thank the Eclipse for making everybody gay. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what Marjorie Taylor Greene and Mike Johnson told me it would do.
Well, you know what? That and the lasers. I don't know what between the two. Okay, I had trouble picking just one person because earlier this week, as Jay just said, Dawn Staley, coach of the women's basketball team at the University at the Gamecocks. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Not only is she a legend as a coach, also a legend as a player. Come on now. But I also thought, you know what? Beyonce kind of won the week, right? Yes. Beyonce became the first black woman to have a number one country album on the country Billboard charts. That is huge. However, I had to come down to the winner of the week being you guys. If you are one of the millions of Americans who got your student loans zeroed out, baby, you have a whole new life. You won the week. It could be up to 30 million people by the time it's done. All the people won the week who got their student loans. That's because this is life-changing for people.
Yes.
I have a relative that told me over the weekend, it's life-changing. $30,000 of her debt as an educator wiped off.
It's one constant bill that's gone.
Yes.
And right now, Americans have to worry about how many bills they're stacking.
That's right.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that is a win. But you know what? Dawn Staley, college women's basketball, Kamala Harris, the moon, everybody won the week. Dawn Staley, thank you very much. That is the readout. Molly Jongfast, Jay Jordan.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.